department is here to discuss it at the annual report. Present. He complied. So he complied and said, no, he will have to do that. So that's why the team is here. So the DG will take us through the members of the team that are here. And probably from the DG will take us through the presentation. Thank you.
And thanks to the members of the committee. And just to say that apologies first, as the chairperson indicated, Deputy Sufada Meza might join us later, who's still in cabinet. We've got about 3-4 things happening at the same time now. As you know, we have President El Bashir who's here, and Aziz is targeted with him, but will also be proceeding to Lusaka today. And the minister, we've got a security sector reform workshop that we're running as part of our sitting in the Security Council together with Slovakia, which is going on as we speak now. And of course, at the same time, there's a JDC, which is also taking place here in Cape Town with the two men. So we are a bit scattered. In terms of the delegation, I think, Chairperson, I should start by introducing the two people who have come to the committee before, but are now coming in a completely slightly different context from the last time we met. And I'll start with Mxolisi Nkosi. As you know, Mxolisi has been in the department for a while. He's been the chief director in Africa in charge of Western Central Africa, and he's now been appointed the deputy director general for Africa Bilateral. As you know, our Africa portfolio has got two components, the bilateral component and the multilateral component that is led by Jesse Duarte. Then you will recall that we lost our CFO at the beginning of the year, Mr. Aplen, who's moved, fortunately, he's not lost to government. He's moved to the services to NIA. And Mr. Moodley has come here previously in his capacity as our head of internal audit. He's now been elevated to the position of CDG and CFO. So he's our head. He's replaced Mr. Apleni. And to the right of Mr. Moodley, there's a very short man there. His name is Nyameko Boso. He's been in our internal audit unit, largely responsible for forensic auditing. He is now the acting head of our internal audit. And next to Nyameko on the right is Grace Kozo, who's with public diplomacy. Martino Pozzolo, you've met previously, honorable members. Pinico on my right is the director on finance, more for the expenditure side. Linda Songwe heads my office in Pretoria. And Tandi Fadana. Tandi, previously, when we came here last, she was the director of finance, but she's now the chief director of finance. So that's the team that we've come with. And maybe just to go straight to the... Of course, Chairperson, it's always very difficult to try and reflect on this annual report because it covers such a wide range of areas. But what we thought we would do, we would try to link up just three components. The first component, we will just talk to you in about 3-4 slides, the essence on the financial status and also some of the issues that have arisen in our audit. The second part, we thought we should talk a bit about the issues around human resource management, because it's a major area for us to focus, because it's one of the key risk areas for the department. As we've made the point before, and as the members have made repeatedly, our work is about, really depends on what people do, essentially. So this is an area of focus for us. And then, of course, the third component, try to talk a bit about the content of the political programs that we're running with respect to the different regions of the globe. So that's what we will try to do. I will run through the presentation with the understanding that we want to give more time for the discussions, and my colleagues will join me at that point. This slide just shows that we had a budgeted amount of 3 billion. We had an actual spend of 2.9, and we are now talking about this year, 2006-2007, the year under review. And you can see on the last column about 97 million that was not spent. This is just another different presentation of this. The previous slide was on the basis of our program. We run 4 programs. The next slide is really on the basis of economic classification. If you look at this slide again, this very first one, or with the finances, you will see that the bulk of our money is allocated to program 2, which is basically the program that supports our mission. That's the bulk of the money. Now, as we said, that we spent, therefore, about 96.8% of our budget. And that 96.8%, the reason we did not spend 100% is for the reasons indicated there. Maybe just to speak very briefly, we had 97 million of underspend. We had some funded vacant posts that we could not fill. We had money that we had to roll over through the year from our Capital West project. Then we had the 10 million rands that was given to us to assist us with the implementation of the new foreign service dispensation. As we'll come and explain later, that process has not been completed yet. So that 10 million was there. And then there was an issue of some of the international organizations. At the time when we made the budget and during the allocation, sometimes we are not exactly clear about what the actual contribution of South Africa is going to be in hard cash, and therefore there were some savings in terms of those contributions, whether it was the UN or the AU, all these many organizations. I think the good thing for us is really to place on record that unlike some time back, probably 3 years back, when we would first of all have a higher level of money not spent, secondly, when we would struggle to get that money through the rollover funds because sometimes treasury would feel our case is not strong. Basically, 100% of the money, in fact, treasury gave us more in terms of the, we returned to the treasury 97 million rand. We asked for it to be rolled over. They gave us that. In fact, they gave us more than that because they gave us 262 million rand rollover. So, in effect, of the allocated budget, we did not lose the money because the case we presented as to why the money could not be spent during that time was a good explanation. This slide just indicates some of the areas that I've already said I'm going to talk briefly to in the course of this. Maybe just to say that in the implementation of the PFMA, which is obviously as an accounting officer one of the primary tasks that we expected to report to you during this period. Just to say that we are comfortable with the progress that the department is making. And maybe even before I go to the actual audit itself, just to highlight the point that if you look at the 2005-2006 audit, not only 2005-2006 and 2006-2007, not only have we been in a position where we have got unqualified audits in both instances, but if you look at the numbers, the issues we put under emphasis of net, there's a significant reduction in those items, which means the issues that the Auditor General had raised in 2005 and 2006 were actually attended to. That is the first thing. But I think part of that, we've been very lucky in the department because we actually have got a very effective audit committee that we are working with. And I really would once again place on record our profound appreciation, particularly to the chairperson, who unfortunately is not with us here today, Ms. Londiwe Mthembu, who is the chair of our audit committee. It's been an extremely supportive audit committee. We took a decision together, the members of the audit committee, because the audit committee had 3 members. We took a decision to actually add 3 other members in order to make sure that at no point now we find ourselves in a situation where there is no continuity in terms of the oversight. And in particular, because of the major process that we are dealing with on ICT, we've reported to you previously, the venting of our ICT system. We thought we needed a member with a specialist in ICT to be a member of the audit committee. And the others, we also thought we needed somebody with a strong legal background, because we had lost previously a member who had a legal background. And we thought that in addition to the chairperson, who comes strongly with an accounting background, we needed to get somebody else with an accounting background. So those three additional members were appointed by the minister. So we've got an audit commissioner that is for the complement of about six members. And we are really comfortable that that audit committee is assisting the department. One of the areas that we've struggled with in the past was this issue about how do we make sure that our financial systems are interfaced with the provinces in such a manner that transactions that take place in the provinces can easily be picked up at head office, and therefore are able, in line with the PFMA on a monthly basis, to present our financial status of financial expenditure to Treasury, and that those status of financial expenditure must be as authentic as is possible, and must be as close to the reality as possible. This is an important thing, because in the past we always had this problem that we would, round about this time when the budget process starts, we would know that we need more money for the following year. But every time we present it, Treasury will go and look at what actually we've reported and what we've actually spent. And because of the delays in the transactions, in the reflection of the transactions, you'll find that we've actually spent 50% of the budget, but our records show conclusively only about 25%. And then it became very difficult to argue for more. So that process has started, and the final rollout will be by April 2008, and we're really happy that we're dealing with that. Honorable members know that you honored us by visiting the department at some stage, and you also went to the site of the new head office building. Just to say that that project is ongoing. As we reported to you, we had to sign an early works agreement in order to lock in, and with the benefit of hindsight, and I think now, and discussing with the colleagues from the Treasury, I think we took a wise decision in signing that anywhere contract, because it was quite clear to us that we are running the risk of significant escalation of the cost of that building. So we've agreed with the Treasury. We've spent about 200 million rand on capital works already, and the Treasury has agreed with us to continue spending another 150 up to the point where we achieve financial closure. And that process is going on. We're probably about 2 weeks or so away from financial closure. We're anxious that we must sign off everything with the successful consortium before they get into the December break. We have previously explained to you what that will essentially contain. If you look, honorable members, on the report that was given by the Auditor General, particularly with respect to the performance of the different departments, one of the main areas of sensitivity, which was a point of weakness reflected in all the audits of the departments, in many of the audits of the departments, and most of those which were qualified largely as a result of that, is the whole area around the asset management. Now, what we have done in the department, precisely because our external portfolio is increasing in terms of our drive towards acquisition of property, but secondly, also because of this implementation of the PFMA and the requirements around proper management of fixed assets, we have created a new chief directorate which is driving this, and we're in the process of making sure that is adequately resourced. And what we have there is just to give a reflection of some of the projects that are ongoing now. And most of those projects are those that we have actually said we will be doing in terms of our business plan. The one that we're particularly excited about, of course, is the construction of a chancery and an appropriate office to sit in the country in Addis Ababa. And that project is going on. In fact, if it were not for the rain, we were hoping that the president will open that facility in January when she goes for the AU summit. But it looks like we might be running about 6 weeks behind schedule. But the others are far more straightforward. And as I say, they are in line with our with what we're putting up in this place. Two things also I would like to highlight in this slide. Just to look at the second last bullet about minor and major works and the refurbishment. The committee has previously raised with us that a concern that about the state, whether in fact we are allocating adequate resources to make sure that the properties, particularly those that are state owned, are always kept in a good state. There was a time when we were running under really tight pressure financially, and we might not have been attending to this, but I think we've got a far much more clear program now to make sure that those are maintained here. And the last bullet refers to some of the new missions that we have established. Importantly, we had Ouagadougou and Benin in the continent and Sao Tome and Principe, but just to draw your attention that Trinidad and Tobago, largely because we wanted to expand our presence in the Caribbean, and also because some of the state departments have got some particular interest there, we thought we should have a presence. And of course, in Romania and Bucharest. Now, we thought we should just start looking at the AGES report on the 2005-06. We've already said that it was not a qualified report, a general anomaly, it was not. And there were 3 points under letters of emphasis. There was the debt management, performance information, and the receivables. And really, this was related, by and large, to the issue of the Africa Cup of Nations in Mali. This was the whole story of that. And then there were other matters that were raised, especially around the audit of our information system. The important thing is that, as a general rule, what we do together with our audit committee, once we get the Auditor General's report, we immediately, together with finance and HR, the corporate services, largely the team that is here, we then design an intervention strategy which takes up each of the issues that has been raised and then makes out and allocates tasks to individuals, break it into mini tasks, allocate that to individuals, and in set clear time frames as to when those things would have been done. And so that is basically the process that we followed, and then we report on a bi-monthly basis to our audit committee on that. Now, so I think the best reflection of the progress with the 2005-06 audit is basically the fact that in the 2006-2007 report, not only that we didn't have again an unqualified audit opinion, but the only thing now that was left under emphasis of matter is this thing about inadequate debt management. And here, it's an issue that we are really, and will come later about the interventions that we're making. It's a problem that's a bit difficult for us to handle, because most of this money is money that we are owed by government departments. This is not debt of internal officers of the department. This is money because, for example, DTI or Defense, they've got people that they place abroad. When they place people abroad, we pay those individuals, those officers on a monthly basis, and we claim from the department. And this sometimes is the problem. But that one we're beginning to get a handle on. The more difficult one is because the Treasury does not want to allow virtually every department to open foreign accounts, understandably, as some sort of measure of reducing risk. So we have a delegation from Province X that goes there. And in certain instances, some of these delegations don't even inform us. They then request our missions to do certain things, including booking of accommodation, organizing transport for seniors, which of course our missions feel obliged to help with. And the process now of claiming this money back from the province becomes a very cumbersome process. So, but nevertheless, although the Auditor General put this under emphasis of matter, I think they also at the same time put in their report a clear recognition of the fact that there was a lot of progress that the department has made to try to put the system to try and address this issue. And of course brought also the attention to the fact that there's an amount of 31 million rand that is part of the overall amount of 157, which we've written to the Treasury and said there is no way we can get this money. We don't even have, this is all accounts predating 2003, and some of it goes back to the period of the integration of the former homeland and Pakistan together. So basically, this is money where there was money, there were transactions that took place, but there are no receipts. And we've done everything possible to pay for it. As I said, some of these are events of 1997, 1996, but of course, as a rule, because this has not been cleared, they would stay there. So we entered into a process with the Treasury where we appointed a forensic auditor. And we basically went and tried to clean up everything that we had and came to the conclusion that it does not matter how much money we spend. We've done everything possible. We are not going to be able to recover the 31 million. On the basis of that, we then wrote to the Treasury to get a write-off. Treasury, in principle, has agreed. The only thing is that in terms of the rules, they can agree, but we need to have 31 million rand to write that off. And so we will have to try and do that in the course of the year. Oh, no. To the right of that. Oh, yes, thank you. Then there were other issues that were identified in this report as issues that we should just keep an eye on. I really would like to then come to deal with some of them. On the inadequate asset management, this is not a major concern for us. Basically, Treasury has sent us a circular to say, what we've done so far, we've recorded all the assets that we have. But by March 2008, the Treasury expects us to have a value attached to each of those assets. Now, that's the big task that we're going to have, to look at paintings, to look at floras, to look at buildings that we have all over the world where we have them, and make sure that there's a monetary value attached to that. So that at the end, by the 31st of March 2008, we can know exactly the full value of what we have. The African Relations Fund, again, there it was about 29 million rand spent for the Africa Cup of Nations in Mali. There was an audit done. This has got nothing to do with us. It's more the Department of Sport. But because we administer the fund, we've written to the Minister of Finance and we're waiting for his concurrence letter. We'll come back to the issue of vacancy rate. There was an issue that was raised, but this was general South government about the delay in the finalization of audits. It's got nothing to do with us. Auditor General had a delay because of the strike, as they're doing before. And then there was the issue of performance information that they wanted us to pay attention to, and indeed were dealing with that. On the issue of debt management, in addition to what I said, just to say that the main intervention that we're getting into, that's why I was saying that for those departments that keep officials in our missions, we are not worried, because all that we are doing, we are signing MOUs with them for them to transfer money to us quarterly in advance. On the performance information, for example, just last Thursday and Friday, we had our midterm review, because part of what the Auditor General is looking for now, as they move towards performance auditing, they would like to make sure that once they've seen your business plan, they want to find strong correlation between the business plan and the performance agreements of the officials. And they want to, on a quarterly basis, to do reviews that can actually record what it is that you've done against your business plan. But that process is quite on track in the department. Here, just to say that the other outstanding issues, which is an audit that the Auditor General has agreed they will do any next year. They had done an information systems audit of our ICT in the department in 2005. And found a number of areas of weakness. But those areas of weakness were areas that we had identified, which is why we reported previously we wanted to revamp the entire ICT infrastructure of the department. So we've agreed with the Auditor General that they will wait until we've completed that process of the revamp, which will be by the end of February next year, and then they'll come back and look at whether we've addressed all the issues that they wanted us to do. African Relations Fund, we administer that fund. I don't think there's anything significant for us to report on that. Again, it was unqualified. The only thing was indeed that to be said after a couple of nations in money. You might see that the income was 150 million and the expenditure was 392. This just reflects that we had some cash in the reserve in the African Relations Fund. We'll start with that. can I then move clearly to the issue of human capital management? And those are the eight points that I would like to address. The first slide, just to talk about organizational establishment, we're just presenting to you the figures. We've discussed before with even when we the members were in the department, we explained the issues of vacancies in the department and how we're dealing with it on a progressive basis. Now, what we would like to draw to your attention is that as of 31st of March 2007, we had 550 funded vacant homes at that point, March 2007. What we then did as a department, we then identified the positions that we thought were critical, and we came with a figure of 389, which are the posts that we advertised. Out of those 389, we filled the 385 positions, but only 218 of those were people who were new into the department. The others were internal promotions. The problem that confronted us here, and then we've reported it even to the Auditor General, because the Auditor General had a specific interest on this issue, had to do with the fact that, for example, when we're looking for assistant directors, often the 7 assistant directors that we wanted, all we could get was 28. So having gone out and tried to recruit, we could not get the suitable candidate. So we have now started the process in the department of reconsolidating and putting out another advert. Now, this process, as you can imagine, what it takes to fill in, to try to advertise 389 positions. We get in excess of 10,000 applicants. So the process of going through this is a very cumbersome. The consequence of that, truly speaking, we can only do it as a major recruitment drive once a year. Second, our experience in the previous years where we're running two recruitment drives is that if we don't get suitable people on the first round, we are very unlikely to get them within a space of 3 months again, because all the people wanted to apply would have applied in the first round. So this is something that we are managing on a progressive basis. But I would like to draw your attention to the fact that we, of that last line there about the cadet program, which actually we think is helping us to fill the establishment from the bottom. And just to say that we had the first group of cadets, as we discussed with the members, and the second group of cadets has now started on the 1st of September. So we essentially have got two groups of cadets, close to 100 cadets in the department as we speak. This is an employment equity table. Essentially shows both a good story and a story for us that is still work in progress. The good story is basically around gender, overall gender parity. The part which is work in progress, which is obviously the main area of concern, is still to look at the senior management upwards, and you find that there you still have some difficulty because women still constitute about 33% of the senior and job management of the department. But compared to where we started, I think that's a forward movement. This slide is presenting the same. I won't go into that. It's just a different way of presenting the same. One of the areas that we are really trying hard to work on in the department, which is a major problem, not only for our department, right across, is really how to make sure that having recruited people really will retain them by establishing robust systems of talent management in the department. And so we're starting with the areas of really trying to protect and profile and make sure that people are aware of the opportunities in the Foreign Service, which is why we joined the SABC Career Fairs. And secondly, also, just to firm up our retention strategy in the department. Now, there are other initiatives, some of them I'll come back to, which are part of it. But this is a major area of focus. When we had our midterm review now on the 1st and 2nd, we spent a lot of time focusing, just as the management of the department, focusing on how we can do this particular area better. I've spoken about employment equity. One of the most exciting initiatives we started recently in the department, we did an organizational climate and culture survey. And essentially what we're trying to do is to get a sense, first of all, of what the perception of the staff of the department is about the department, and secondly, what are the main areas of concern, and thirdly, what is the sort of idea that most of the people would have in terms of where we should be going. I think it has been a very good exercise. We've done it in head office in the mission. We included locally recruited staff. It was an excellent routine. We've looked at it. We presented to our senior management. In the next few days, we're supposed to be presenting this to the full complement of the staff of the department. And the next biggest challenge now for us is going to be what set of intervention measures to put in place to try and address some of the weaknesses. There are some strengths that have been pointed out, there are weaknesses. Just to say, one of the areas that I think is keeping on arising as a major issue that we'll be focusing on is really focus a bit around the soft issues in terms of leadership and management of people. People find the environment challenging, they think foreign affairs is a good department, the exposure is good, opportunities for growth are good, but sometimes they feel that the soft, the human element about it, we need to improve the people. Another area that we're working on is looking at the wellness of our officials, both those who are leaving as well as the families of the we've got this employee wellness program in the department which we've been trying to extend now to include families. And again, we've come to the conclusion that maybe this is an area that we have not focused sufficiently on, given sometimes what we are now getting as manifestations of the pressure that people feel either at the time when they leave or coming back. So we're improving that. Of course, we've got the HIV/AIDS program and VCT and all those other programs that, by and large, most of the government departments are supposed to work on. Another area we've been worried about has been, and we've given a specific focus, is the labor relations area. And here, the main issue was the time it takes for us to close disciplinary cases. That's the area that we've been worried about. So we've been working hard on that, and we're giving some data on the improvement, but the single most important intervention I think we've made, in addition to all the improvements, recruiting more people, looking at the quality of people in our labor relations unit, which I think we have done, but also the last bullet, we decided now that we must actually appoint a full-time presiding officer, who is an experienced person, who is an advocate, who used to work in the CCMA, and is fully in the department and helps to drive our cases. First of all, to make sure that by the time a sanction is given, it is well considered, and therefore the chances of any appeal, a prolonged appeal, are reduced. But also more important, one of the major delays was that our presiding officers were using the same managers who got other responsibilities in the department. And so sometimes we find that the time of the availability and availability of other people was always an issue. So this is a major issue for us. We think prompt closure of these cases is an important issue just to maintain a high level of discipline and consciousness within the organization. So that's what we're looking at. The FSD project, we have reported that this is something we're going to do. Just to say, the actual groundwork on the new Foreign Services Translation has been done, has been completed, signed off from the side of Foreign Affairs, but now this has, of course, the DPFA is the custodian of this. It's now with the DPFA, and they have said to us they would hope that we will be able to introduce a new system by January, but we will see. At the FSI, honorable members, this is one of the areas, of course, that you have repeatedly been worried about. You've raised it with us. Maybe just to say there are set of things that we've been focusing on in this year. We presented to you before a general strategy for the repositioning of the FSI. We've dealt with the improvement of the existing curriculum, particularly adding stronger components of economics into our training together with the DTI. The next leg that we try to work on now has been really to try to make sure that the FSI works closely with other FSIs in the continent. And I think the high water mark of that was a recent meeting of all the training institutes of foreign affairs across the globe, which was for the first time hosted here in the continent and was hosted in Mozambique. And of course, we worked strongly in partnership with Mozambique on that. And so we are trying to, and we've been at the center of trying to make sure that the African Foreign Service Institute work in a coordinated manner. The second area was for a meeting that took place of the FSI between South Africa, Brazil, and India. And I must say here, the Indian training institute is probably one of the strongest in the developing world. And there's a lot that we can learn there, and of course also from Brazil. So this is a very interesting initiative for us. But also the other initiative that we are very excited about is that we've been dreaming of the day when we will begin to run programs at our FSI that are not South Africa specific, where we begin to bring diplomats from within the region so that we have an opportunity for common reflection on issues. So we started that. We ran now two programs during the period under review. And the area that we tried to focus on to start with is the area of multilateral diplomacy, which we are working on together with UNIT. Then there's an issue around just to make sure that the programs that we have are properly registered with SAFA and that is ongoing work, which of course speaks to the need, therefore, if we want them to be registered, to maintain the quality of the programs that we are producing. And I've already spoken about the cadet program. Now, we've listed the honorable members what we regard still as the challenges that face us in this broad era of human capital management. But I will move from those challenges because the challenges then help us to map up the priorities for 2007-2008, which we've listed there again as the major area. Of course, the area of recruitment, the area of further improvement in labor relations, at the FSI, the accreditation. We've spoken about the organizational culture to make sure that that's improved. The employment equity plan, the issue of foreign languages that we discussed before. Maybe in closing this part around the corporate services project, just to say that one of the important initiatives that our HR has actually undertaken is to have just a bit of a step back and reflecting on what it would take and what would be the key elements of a fairly well thought out comprehensive human resource strategy for the Department of Foreign Affairs. And again, when we had our workshop on the 1st and 2nd, we had the opportunity for them to present that. And I'm stressing that because, again, it is quite clear to us that having dealt with, by and large, and from where I sit, I am comfortable that we've now dealt with most of the different problems, and I think we're on the right path in terms of the implementation of the PFMA adherence to prescripts, whether it's on the human resource administration side or on the financial management side. I think the big challenge for us now is to begin to say, how do we make sure that we cushion the department because of very well thought out human resource strategies so that really the people that we recruit we keep, that people feel confident that they career and succession planning, and therefore we can maintain a body of the, in a sense, a body of some of the key individuals within the department to make sure that whatever changes take place, that we can sustain the foreign policy achievement that South Africa is registered, particularly in the first 8 years. So that is really where we are now, Chair. I will then move on to just highlight some few points on the political content. I spent a bit of time on the just to give a sense, because in a sense I thought we should contextualize some of the comments of the Auditor General and some of the strategic challenges the department faces to deliver on the programs that are before us. And here, by and large, I think we can safely say that the department we are happy with the achievements and progress that we made in the implementation of our program right across the board. Whether it's on the Africa agenda, progress that we've made there, if we look at the broad area of global governance, in the year under review, we did two things. One, we're chairing the G77, and then we moved on to starting the Security Council. If we look at the issue around South-South cooperation, our focus at this point was really to make sure that we had a successful meeting of the officials in NAS, Africa Asia, as a platform to prepare for the ministerial that is going to take place in the course of 2008. And in terms of the North-South engagement, it was far much more, again, continued delivery of the possibilities, especially amongst the G8 countries, to support the African agenda. And I think right across the spectrum of issues, we think we've read some good progress. Now, we mentioned then very specific issues that I spotted, and I will just run through them. First of all, the Pan-African Parliament, I think we are on track. The information we have is that on Friday this week, the minister should be able, or the minister should be able to announce the successful group of architects who is then going to design the Pan-African Parliament. So we're at that stage now. In terms of meeting our obligations, when the continent assigned this parliament to us, in all fairness, I think we've done not only what was expected, we've actually done more than what was expected. Are there areas of concern? Yes, two specific areas of concern related to our support of the Pan-African Parliament. One is the issues of crime that keep on being reported to us affecting members of the Pan-African Parliament, and we're dealing with that together with the security agency. The second issue which we've dealt with now had to do with management of the entry of members of the parliament when they get into South Africa, but we found now a formula together with Home Affairs that enables that their movement in and their movement out is held in such a manner that it has caused them the respect that they would expect from South Africa. So the issue of time is the one that we're dealing with. Then there's a big task around the diaspora. Our focus has now been largely on preparatory meetings. We are now going to have the ministerial, in fact, we're starting with the senior officials meeting next week on the 14th, and then a ministerial on the 16th, 17th, and 18th of November, and we're having a summit of the diaspora, which is going to take place sometime in the second quarter of next year here in South Africa. So this is, I think, in terms of the preparations, we're comfortable this has gone on well. A big task that we had to work on during this period, 2006-2007, which is still topical now, is really around the issue of regional integration. You will recall that we hosted the extraordinary summit here in October last year. And essentially, this is Deputy Minister Aziz Farhat, when I said it's going to look like it's going specifically for this task. But I must say, from where we sit, we are comfortable that now, in fact, today, Cabinet should be discussing a document that was a joint product of the Treasury, DTI, and Foreign Affairs, which gives up options about how we should approach this issue of regional integration and speaks to some of the issues that were raised, particularly during the August summit. At the heart of this problem, of course, the members know this far much more. It has to do with the fact of a bit of a report that was skeptical about, that was presented by the consultants that were commissioned by SADC, which was presented in the August of summit, which of course proposes a route towards regional integration, which in our sense does not help because it does not build regional integration on the basis of building on the body of learning and experience that is there, that actually is there within SADC. But that's a debate that is taking place within SADC. Of course, during this period, again, within SADC, in terms of the political agenda, the focus has been largely on the DRC, on the Lesotho, and increasingly starting towards the end of the period under review, the issue of Zimbabwe. With respect to the implementation of NEPAD, I think our preoccupation in 2006-07 was really to make sure we had been concerned that the government and other sectors of civil society, particularly business, but we did not have what we could call a South African NEPAD strategy, a national strategy. We had a strategy for the continent, but what is it in South Africa? What is our national strategy to engage? And that is basically, I think, the development of that framework was a major achievement. Then, of course, we went through the APRM. Members know about that. An issue that still remains a problem, we thought we were going to resolve it in the 2006-2007. It is now going to a special meeting, a brainstorming meeting of the heads of state, which is going to take place on the 22nd of this month in Senegal, is the issue really of managing the implementation of the Maputo decision about the integration of NEPAD into the AU. And here it's really about how do we make sure that you really legitimize, or rather take into effect the fact that NEPAD is a program of the AU, but at the same time, given some of the capacity constraints in the AU, you do not do that in such a mechanical manner that you actually kill NEPAD. So that is basically the tension and the issue. Of course, there is simultaneously the issue which keeps on coming virtually every summit, which is the issue about the different perspectives about what NEPAD should have achieved now, and we know the proponents of the different views. I think, honourable members, we cannot bore you on the discussions on the work that is covered in our annual report on the peace and security, because virtually on all these areas, we have called us at different points in time to come and address the committee far much more in detail. I think we'll rather just take questions. Suffice to say, on our side, the only two areas of slight concern that we have, that terrorists are not moving as fast as we might have anticipated at the time. One is the Burundi peace process, and we know all the problems that have come in, and part of the complicating factor are the seizures that have taken place within the SNL, and of course the other concern is Somalia. We had hoped that by now we would have been probably at a point when Ethiopian troops would have withdrawn, and in fact AMISOM would have taken over. But all of us who follow the situation in Somalia know that we are nowhere close to that thing. With respect to South-South cooperation, again, I think on IPSA, high water mark last year was the summit, and I think that has now been overtaken because of the successful summit that we had here just a few weeks ago. I've spoken about NASP, and again, just to assure you, South Africa, we've done everything we're supposed to do on that. The ministerial, which Egypt has offered to host, will be in 2008. In NAM, we've continued our own contribution in NAM, of course, now bearing in mind that since 2006, we are no longer members of the NAM Troika. But we are working very closely with the Troika, particularly with Malaysia and Chuba. And on the Commonwealth, our focus has been far much more currently to support Uganda to make sure that they host a successful summit, which is coming on in the next few weeks again. But no major other issues. When we presented our business plan for 2006-07, we had just assumed the chairship of the G77 and China. And some members raised the issue of concern at that point in time about the strength of the relevance of the G77, whether we're going to make a mark in G77 during our chair. And of course, I think we are happy with some of the progress that was achieved during our custodianship of G77, and we missed some of the issues there. On the reform of the UN, it's a mixed set of issues. On one side, we are not happy, by and large, to summarize what comes in the next two slides. We are not happy, obviously, with the reform of the Security Council, and I think that process more or less to slow, but we are encouraged by the fact that the president of the G8 has started a formal negotiation process. That is one side. But of course, we know that there's other progress that's taken place, particularly around the areas of management reform. And indeed, for the continent, an important issue has been the success the commencement of the work of the Peace Building Commission, and the selection of African countries as amongst the first beneficiaries of that. And the last area, which came right at the end of the period under review, was, of course, we are happy that the Security Council is taking seriously the proposals that South Africa put during our presidency in March around looking at Chapter 8 of the UN Charter and making sure that there's a far much more structured way of interaction between particularly the Peace and Security Council of the AU and the UN Security Council. I think all of us have been following the events in the Middle East. I think really we probably have not had as much impact on the Middle East in the period, largely because the situation got complicated, especially with the one with the situation that happened in Lebanon early on, but also the fragmentation within the Palestinians themselves. And I think most of our work, and there's been all sorts of envoys coming to South Africa, as you know, we also even had the honor to host the president of the Palestinian National Authority. And our focus has really been to try to assist the Palestinians to bridge the gap, to try to work far much closer together. I think that's really been the focus for us now. If I may just fast forward a bit and say that we've been following very closely now the discussions that are taking place about the envisaged meeting on the Middle East, which was supposed to be now in November or December. Of course, we are concerned about the fact that the discussions between Israel and Palestine don't seem to have progressed significantly for the two parties to present a coherent proposal there, particularly about the final state of Israel. So I'm just saying mixed bag of feelings around our progress, and I think in mitigation we can simply say that most of the constraints that we face are really because of objective factors on the ground, not because we have not tried as much as we possibly could. There's a major issue around terrorism, which is a major issue that South Africa, of course, is committed to. Just to say that, again, without getting into the details, we've gone on all our requirements in terms of our reporting, in terms of the 1540 committee at the UN. Our interdepartmental counterterrorism working group is working well together. So I think there South Africa is meeting its obligation. On the issues of disarmament and non-proliferation, we had reported previously about the issue of our chairship of the NSG. We had we started during the period under review and is ongoing. We have previously reported to you that one of the sticky issues that we anticipated we might have to handle is the issue of the US-India nuclear deal, and we all are following the events, particularly some of them domestic within India, about this deal. Suffice to say, so far in our chairing of the NSG, precisely because the two parties are still discussing, we have not reached a point where this issue begins to confront us as a major issue. I think we probably would have better opportunity and possibility to reflect on our chairship, on our membership of the Security Council, maybe when we present the next annual report, because for the period under review, it would have been commenting only on the first 2 months. So I think I won't say much about that. Safe to say that on our side, we try to do everything that we have promised to do. On the human rights side, and again, here, I think it's the same issue. I think we're making the contributions we need to make. We're trying to focus the agenda of the new council, but it's the same debate, again, around the balance between making sure that the right to development in particular and the developmental issues are a central element of the work of the Human Rights Council, but more importantly, to make sure that this whole issue about peer review, the equivalent of peer review of countries, is done in a far much more open way. I think on the G20, this is work in progress. We're just giving support. Maybe just to mention that we have joined the group on solidarity levels, which is basically a French, largely driven by the France and President Lula, by and large, largely the people who have been driving this. And we are working on different methods on how to contribute to that fund. South Africa, particularly our Treasury and Revenue Services, are not keen that we base our contribution on the ledger on ethics as is suggested or carried out by other countries. The issues about the reform of the work that's going on in the WTO, I think there's been detailed briefings to the committee on that. All of us know that there's not much that has changed. Last time we presented to you, we're in the middle of trying to conceptualize this EU-Africa strategic partnership. Suffice to say that we have now at the stage where that was implemented, and of course the first important landmark of that was us hosting the Troika here. We are now working together with the EU that the first ever summit between the EU, Troika and South Africa will probably be held in the course of next year, in the second half of next year during the French presidency of the EU. And what we focused on during 2006-2007, of course, was the implementation of that strategic partnership and the review of the CDPA. I think we did, I think that review went on well, and I think the good manifestation of the fact that review went on well is that when we met in the Troika meeting in South Africa, by which time this was our target date for us to sign off on the review, that was done, that was achieved. I've already spoken to the new missions that we've opened. On state protocol, really, the state protocol and public diplomacy, I think we've given a lot of detailed reports, and most of that tends to reflect on the work that we were doing, what our assessment is. But I think on some of those issues, probably we'll be more interested to hear the comments of the members of the committee, given some of the concerns that you might have. Maybe one area around the state protocol which obviously has got an impact, I would not be surprised if you will be receiving some complaints from some of the members of the diplomatic corps. We have a constant problem that we're trying to manage with the diplomatic corps, which is really around the facilitation of important guests for the state protocol line to come into South Africa. We're just giving these figures to give you a sense of what we handle in the course of the year. Problem is that we have very limited facilities, and even now we are trying to meet the EU ambassadors because of some representations that they have made with regard to this. And again, in the report, we give a sense of some of the work that is done on consular services. Just to say, I think we are happy that every time there's either any unfortunate event taking place, and we've just given some examples, that involves South African citizens, I think we try to respond as promptly as possible to interact with the families. Of course, not all these efforts have a happy ending. In certain instances, we still cannot assist the families in terms of relocating their loved ones, as happened, for example, in the case of the group that is in Iran, which the committee is familiar with. Chairperson, I really would like to stop there so that you can take it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gigi, for the presentation. Maybe one should start by saying that we asked members to reflect on the presentation, and if they have issues that they may want clarity on, and that we do that. I might have to move to this side, because if you don't see a general, you are bound to defend the transmission. Just here, and then go to
house. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got a lot of questions, but maybe I'll try to minimize. I'll touch the questions which I see they are key. Number one, I'll start by maybe thanking the DG about this report, the presentation of the report. But to start to comment with something, DG, in your last report, I mean, in this one, consular service, I'm a little bit concerned. That is a concern I wanted to raise, in particular with your own staff. Yes, of course, if there's something happening, you react very quick. But what about the life and the conditions where that is? I'll put an example. When an ordinary councillor passed away here in South Africa, they are doing something. They will put all this fire brigade and put the coffin and what. But what about with their own members when they come back home? And then also, last thing about it, with their own staff. If a person is deployed in Iraq, maybe kids were left in London, what do you do? Who's popping the money for those things? I think that thing, those things must be looked upon because there are serious concerns about those things. And then I will come to the question. Chairperson, I will request the DG maybe to explain for us because last year in his own annual report, the DG indicated they spoke about the plane, that they are intending of buying a plane which was going to be managed by the SNDF. But this year we hear nothing. We don't know what happened with that thing. Then also, what happened with our trip? Because we proposed a trip to Palestine, which was approved. And after that, we don't know what happened. And then also, in your own annual report, there is the annual report makes a reference to IORAC, Indian Ocean Rim Association and Regional Cooperation, Special Fund on page 73. It may be useful to give more information what this fund is about and its intended objective. And then also, the Americans has already formed a structure called AFRICON, and of which it was rejected by the most leaders in the African continent. If we, maybe you can clarify us that what are the developments of it, because there's quiet about it. And then I'll try to end about you see, DG, I'm a little concerned about some of the foreign missions which which people have proposed. I'll put an example. Janene, we were together in Timor Leste. In Timor Leste, I think they proposed time and again by both parties of Fanana Guzma and ACATEN. They proposed that South Africans must open something, a mission in Timor Leste. But it's quiet. And lastly, it's about the intervention. Like you mentioned, a lot of intervention in Burundi, etc., etc. On two areas. If you can clarify and brief us about the issue of Western Sahara and Morocco, that what are the developments? And then last one, Swaziland. Because it's quiet about Swaziland. Swaziland, there's nobody talking anything about Swaziland. Last time, you promised to brief us outside, but nothing happened.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you for allowing me, in spite of the fact I'm from the Defense Committee, so I'd be like more interested in the security aspect. I would like the department to kindly elaborate as to exactly what role it plays in terms of our troop deployment. Now, the reason I'm asking this is that while we're sitting in the committee, we begin to get the sense that some very crucial, serious concerns of the SANDF does not seem to be taken into consideration while decisions are made in terms of troop deployment. So if you could explain exactly what processes are followed, and exactly when and how you make this decision to deploy troops. That would be one of my questions. The other is you refer to some significant progress made in terms of the SADC standby brigade. That significant move has been made. How significant is it? If you don't have time, I mean, just to give me a sense of what goes on there. On page 5, you spoke about the upgrading of the existing diplomatic guest houses. I take it that these guest houses similar to something what they would refer to as a presidential guest house in other countries. You say that you are upgrading one of the guest house, and then you are now constructing a new one. Are these the land that you purchased for this? Is it two different places? What actually happens to the guest house that you are refurbishing? Because you're investing a lot of money there. What will happen to it? Finally, Chair, with your permission, you spoke about the problems and challenges you're facing in terms of debt management due to interdepartmental claims not being honored timely. If you have the figures, can you tell me how much claim do you have against the DOD? And are you getting any joy? If you don't have the figures now, that's fine. But I just want to get the sense of how the DOD is cooperating with you. Thank you.
You will note that those questions are more defense related. The honorable member comes from defense. So you need to decide whether you'll be able to answer that, given the fact that there are details that the defense could provide. However, linked to the question that you were asking about deployment, maybe we should broaden that question and say the white paper on peacekeeping, which we play a critical role on. Maybe not much about deployment as such, the physical deployment, but the question of the white paper that we have in terms of deployment, given the fact that when it was drafted, the responsibility we have today are actually doubled the time when that white paper was drafted. Maybe that should be the real question as opposed to the details of deployment.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thank you, TV. On the question of property management, inventory, and so on, I'd like an update concerning the Juba land issue, South Sudan. Last time we explained the difficulties of non-existence of rules and so on with regard to the risk of purchasing that land. And then you mentioned that issue of the write-off of the money, and you attributed part of the problem from the integration of administration in the past. I'd like to find out, concerning foreign affairs, whether all the property that belongs to foreign affairs as part of those difficulties has been traced, that belongs to former homeland, for example. Have been able, maybe somebody here can also elaborate within the committee. On the management of challenges, there's a constant issue that is raised with some of us privately, so I'll put it as much general as possible without details. How are you dealing with the challenges that apparently exist in managing the relationships between ambassadors and the managers under them? And some of these issues apparently relate to transformation methods or lack thereof, which then causes those tensions. On foreign languages, I see that you have omitted one of the AU official languages. Swahili. I thought our priority is consolidation of the African agenda. So I think this language ought to be taught to our Catholics. I don't know why it was omitted. On the backlog of cases, disciplinary cases, I know that this is an issue that plagues the whole country. Can you give us a sense within foreign affairs how bad is the situation? As you correctly indicated, that it affects disciplinary issues and morale and so on. And then, further integration. The Angolan question, you mentioned the boundary is one of the major challenges. From our perspective, parliamentarians, we are concerned about lack of progress in what we regard to be much closer relationship with Angola, given our past association with them, and the advantage, of course, economically. Again, on the consultation of the African agenda, the PAP, I've heard what you said about those challenges, but we think that there's a deeper issue that the department must look into with regards to PAP, not just discharging our obligations as a committee. We think the matter goes further than that. The fact of the matter, we're host of this parliament. I'm aware that we have an agreement, which then you are saying you are complying with. And there's no query about that. But if that parliament is not functioning, nonetheless, it's an issue for us. Because it's also dear, number one. Number two, we are spending money towards this parliament. So I would like maybe you came up with an answer to this. We need to look at the strategy of turning around that organization. Perhaps the political level. I'll ask the last question and give others a chance. I may come later on. On the consolidation of the African agenda, obviously this agenda cannot succeed without unity. I assume it's an agenda for development. But there are clear challenges of division, namely North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, Francophone, Commonwealth division. I'd like to hear now or some other time, what is the strategy to turn this situation around, to create division? Because this is a matter that we come across in all our associations with the continent, every night. Pause for now.
This is probably when we deal with the PAP, you've alluded to the fact that the question of entry has been sorted out. And you then raised the fact that it was your last line. How many people do you normally facilitate through the diplomatic lounge? I assume that the entry that has been resolved does not involve the diplomatic lounge, because then it will create a contradiction. But you said that there are issues around security that has not been resolved, which is primary, in fact, that creates a serious problem. Maybe we have to find time to go through the PAP and let's discuss the PAP in detail at some point. Because there's an issue about staffing in the PAP, that we are hosting the parliament, but I'm interested to know how many South Africans are actually working in that institution. Which is quite interesting. So I'm sure that you could comment on that, but maybe we might have to come back at some point to look at the PAP in detail. I know now they are facing the difficulty of allowances and finances that were given. And I'm not sure what is our position on that particular aspect to deal with those issues. General.
Thank you, Chairperson and colleagues. Firstly, I would like also to join others in thanking you for the detailed report you have just presented to us. On page 13, labor relations, mine would be to suggest that perhaps the department, together with the Public Service Commission, should seriously investigate the possibilities of working with one of the universities with a view to target some of the students who are finalizing their degrees in the legal department and introduce them in your department as intent to work with your legal officers, so that you can expedite these cases. Just a suggestion. On the international funding, we seem to be doling a lot of money all over the show, and I'm a little bit concerned. But there are international conventions which I think the Department of Foreign Affairs should be coordinating or monitoring. Take, for instance, the ratification of international conventions such as biodiversity. We don't seem to be in the know, or the public of South Africa, whether the people can access the fund or claim some of the fund under the GEF, that is
the environment, global environmental fund. The only institution I've read about which was benefiting, which was only Kirstenbosch. But Kirstenbosch, as you know, is not under the threat of desertification. There are areas in the outlying areas that in the rural areas of South Africa. But do the people know that they can claim those monies and start introducing biodiversity related programs in those areas? So I would like to see in future a sort of a reference in your report which says the State Department, Environment, Minerals and Energy and so on, trade and industry which have ratified this convention, these are the benefits for our people. We can't just be like Father Christmas and dole out money without measuring whether we are benefiting out of this fund. Lastly, the Foreign Affairs is run by two offices. That is your office, Foreign Affairs Department, and that of the President. I hope in future you could bring a person from the President, because there are some issues which you feel that when you read papers or the Minister of Foreign Affairs, you are wondering who is going to account for these actions which are run by the President. So sometimes we do have questions. I hope that in your report in future, there could be a sort of a column or a paragraph which says, in conjunction with the Office of the President, this is what we have done. So, thank you. Mine, there are no questions, just an input. Don't worry.
Thank you, Chair. I think it is my turn, and I want to thank the DG. A number of questions have already been asked, and I'm covered. Mine are perhaps just a few clarity on them. On page 5, we talk of projects in design in 6 countries, and I would like to know exactly what's involved here. And on the same page, we also speak of acquired land in Bamako. Is it possible to know just how much money is paid on land in Bamako and also the building in Maseru? The reference was also made to departmental integrated health and wellness program, and this is supposed to include HIV and AIDS program. Can there be a little bit of elaboration on that? But then we spoke, you spoke of our national strategy for NEPAD and integration of NEPAD with AU. I would like to say that my understanding has always been that NEPAD is the economic wing or tool for Africa's development. Is there any controversy on this particular issue? And I think that it was understood that obviously, although it is a baby of the AU, but AU was not going to interfere to the extent that it retarded the progress of NEPAD, you know, as an economic wing. DG, I don't know whether this question is relevant to you. I know we have asked this before, but it is my wish that some influence is made with the higher authorities with regard to some of our former freedom fighters who have been received visas to enter, particularly the United States of America. I wouldn't be raising this issue if not only yesterday. One of our men came to our offices in Cape Town. He has this problem. There have been many other problems. But if I can give you just an indication here, particularly the United States of America would normally ask for police clearance
and the police clearance is done. In some cases, they say, well, also in the Sufi, for instance, the war project is, and that is done. But in, after police clearance, the United States will still refuse the visa. And you don't understand what was the purpose of the going out for police clearance if after all the effort, I'm still refused the visa. And I hope it can be, there can be some influence of some kind with regard to the current policy. I think that a strong representation must be made in the United States. The man who came to see me yesterday got a job in the United States, but he did spend some 2 years in jail, 4 were suspended. But the sentence, when you are sentenced to 8 years, 4 of those years were suspended. 2 on good behavior in jail, he got parole. So he really spent 2 years. And he still is being refused to get a visa to the United States. Thank you.
On that aspect, on the 14th of this month, there's a close meeting with the ambassador in the team of the USA. Maybe that question should be posed when we meet with the ambassador. We've agreed on the details of that meeting. I'll probably take never through what we've agreed on that day. So probably that question could be raised on that particular situation. But also, that relates to ourselves when we process visas. What do we do with the documentation that we do? I know that you could say to me that's home affairs. But I've seen in a number of embassies that you go at the back where the trash is, you get all those applications piling there, kept somewhere in the back office after we've processed that. What actually happens? What happens to that documentation after we've done whatever we need to do? Because it creates a problem when you see that the pile of that documentation, photos of people, documents that you really needed for them to be able to be given a visa, and you see them thrown in the trash somewhere at the back. And then maybe also that could relate directly to the issues that we also deal with in terms of our own diplomats who are in the country and our diplomats who are outside the country from our own situation. To what extent do we give, what extent do we agree as diplomats that country A qualifies for these 5 items, and in turn, they will give our own diplomats the same treatment? To what extent do we give certain things to certain diplomats and our own people don't get the same treatment? You go to a number of embassies, you realize that the ambassador here actually has more than what our ambassador gets in that particular country in terms of recognition. Those are the issues that could be minute, but they go to the heart of the relationship, how we relate at that particular level. So possibly when you deal with these questions, you could also be able to enlighten us as to how that relationship works. You have a situation where an embassy is allowed to have 5 officials to go up until to the door of the plane, but our embassies only have 1 accreditation. Only 1 person can go up until there's only the ambassador. All other staff members can't do that. But whilst in 10 here at home, and we've given everybody the same access, that's the problem. And also that relates to the access of diplomats to our senior leadership in the country. How is that decision made? Because in some instances, our ambassador are not in first term with the heads of state, but sometimes here we are asked by ambassadors that they might want to meet the president and not meet the officials that will lead to the president. How do you relate to those issues as to who has access where and where the access stops in that particular aspect?
Thank you, sir.
There's an issue about grievances you talked to DG. Can I get a sense of what would have been the content of the grievances as lodged against the department? I know you spoke about one of the issues that you're going to look into, people management from your leadership level. Would you say then that the kind of grievances that were lodged, the nexus was this, that it speaks to the general mission of the department in dealing with employees, or it was just an isolated event that had nothing to do with the mission and vision of the department, if I can get that sense? Secondly, well, I'll bring another dimension that one might want to say it's not foreign affairs related, but if you look at the basic tenets of one of the pillars of foreign policy, is that there should be peace and security within the borders of South Africa's country. I take it that foreign affairs is very well conversant with the training of different embassies in terms of languages that are across South Africa's country, across the borders or beyond the borders. Does the department that specifically deals with issues that would affect or that would interrelate with that mission, that's the Department of Justice. The high crime rate in South Africa is such that it's not only then being committed by your South African commissioner. When you go to court, you'd find that the department itself has no interpreters of languages that are beyond the borders of South Africa. Is it a possibility that your department can, I wouldn't want to use the wording of a memorandum of understanding, but is it a possibility that in the context of intergovernmental relations, something can be worked up in that sense? Because if you speak about, for example, members of the PAP who have experienced problems of crime, and those members having to go to court and can't understand any other language except their language, what becomes the relationship between yourself and the court in that essence? Just wanted to check whether the department can be able to facilitate something of that kind. Of course, I'll be able to raise it within the Department of Justice as well, because that is one aspect that is linking between all of these two departments, and I find it very awesome. Thirdly, what is the point? No, it's fine. Let me leave it for now. Thank you.
Chair, thank you for this. I've made a list of the economic institutions that your department linked to, and there are 10, a huge variety and a huge range. And it's clear to me, I won't repeat who they are, IPSA, etc., etc. It's clear to me now that because of the changing nature of the world system, that political relations are increasingly linked to economic relations. And it's clear that your department, through your own report and what you've told us today, is getting immersed in relationships which are maybe even more economic than political. So I think it would be extremely valuable if somebody, perhaps you're initiated by yourself, together with the Treasury and Trade and Industry, could produce a document on South Africa's international economic relations so that we get an overview. Because the danger is, and as I read the report, that there's a fragmentation of economic relations because of the nature of the way these things are working. And it is so important that South Africa has one vision around international economic relations. And I suspect that your department would be very well placed to take an initiative within Cabinet to produce such a document. Lastly, just the question of NEPAD. I'm delighted to hear that we're finally getting a NEPAD strategy of South Africa. It has been a huge embarrassment for me, frankly, working in the rest of Africa, that we talk a lot about the continental dimension without being able to say, yes, we have got South African projects, but there's no strategy, and I think that the urgency of that is really quite important. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and let me also appreciate the presentation, DG. I think, as usual, it's extremely informative. That is why mine are going to be three-part questions. There were others which already being asked. The first one that I want to ask is about this U.S. Sponsored peace conference, whether South Africa has been invited, and whether Hamas in Gaza is going to be involved in the peace conference. Secondly, I think in the last 48 hours, our president had some discussions with the president of Sudan. Now, I simply want to know that at the level of the department, were there any discussions? And if there were any discussions, what happened to the report produced by this committee? Was it accommodated, or is it still going to be accommodated? For instance, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, the report which was made by Dr. Lutuli to Parliament was also adopted by Parliament, and it has a number of recommendations on the issues of Darfur and Sudan. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Person. I think I'll be brief. The DG spoke about various activities that concern capital expenditure from the budget. I wanted to find out, firstly, whether you have deadlines or imagined or real deadlines, for instance, for the recovery of the money that is, of the funds that are owed to the department by the various departments, as you said. You did explain some of the difficulties in the process of recovering those funds. But one, I'm sure the committee would expect, for instance, that when you give us your report next year, there should have been some definite conclusion on this matter. That's why I'm asking whether you have any deadline by yourself to say by such and such a time we want to have resolved this problem. Secondly, the question of the headquarters for the department, building the office for the department. You did explain what you intend to have there. Is there, again, here a time frame by which you can say by such and such a time, by such and such a year, the building will be up and function? And the same question for the Pan-African Parliament headquarters in South Africa, that is to be built in South Africa. How long do you think this is going to take us? Now, next, on the African Relations Fund, well, I think this is a, to me, I think it's a very progressive effort for us, you know, just 13 years after our independence, to be talking about us in South Africa assisting other countries in Africa, for example. But there are many countries in Africa that are older than this, for some 50 years, for some 45 years. Are we the only ones, for instance, who have this kind of a program where we are assisting, you know, certain projects in African countries? This takes me to the question of the Western Sahara. I see that in the African Renaissance Fund, South Africa has assisted Western Sahara with a sum of about 10 million. Okay, this is just to assist in a certain way, not a big way. But I'm interested to find out what progress have you made on the question of Western Sahara in terms of really moving towards real independence of that country. Are we getting any support, for instance, from the French-speaking countries? Because I think my research shows that it's mainly the English-speaking countries that are supporting Saharawi as an independent country. How far are the Francophone countries on this issue in terms of supporting and moving with us towards having Western Sahara attain its complete independence? Now, on the South-South cooperation, especially with reference to IPSA, obviously some progress is being made. Particularly in terms of agreements that have been taken. But there are some negative dealings that we hear about that happen among our countries. I think I must bring this up. Do you never hear, for instance, whether these are also being included as we try to solve the problem that exists? I'm thinking in particular of this nagging problem of drug trafficking. I mean, lately there have been serious reports about drug trafficking, particularly from South America. And I'm afraid, according to the reports that we get, that includes Brazil. I'm not saying that Africa is not exporting drugs to other countries, but I'm saying as our leaders discuss this issue, and as you as a department also interact with your relevant structures in these countries, shouldn't we also be discussing the negatives that are actually affecting the people on the ground as we try to solve the problem? Thank you, Chair President.
Dizzy, we'll take this round of questions and then we'll assess the situation. Dizzy, in your report on matters of emphasis, you dealt with that particular 31 million, and you've indicated that the Treasury agrees that that 31 million is being unaccounted, we could write it off. But the Auditor General says that Regulation 11.4 issued in terms of Section 76 of the PFMA, write-off of the long outstanding debts of 31 million from the departmental savings from current and future financial year. So it means that we are going to lose money either in this budget or in the next budget. What does that mean in terms of the previous and the fact that you did not get all what you wanted from Treasury? Are we going to fit with a situation that is problematic in terms of getting the necessary resources? I know that you mentioned some savings somewhere. And in the same issue, it says that the Department's HR plan did not comply with Part 3, D.1.C of the Public Service Regulation. If we could deal with that particular aspect as to why we've not been able to be compliant on that, because it says that this regulation requires that the department plan within the availability budgeted funds for the recruitment, retention, and deployment of human resources, and it says that we are not complying on that particular aspect. It touched the question of the Mali trust. Is that money recoverable, DG? I'm raising this because in another interaction with the Minister of Sport, he was adamant that the Sports Department does not owe this money. They were not party to the arrangement. And he was determined that they do not owe this money at all. Is this money recoverable? Or is something that they will be told that we have to write it off also? And given the nature of this. And it gives an impression that we actually went beyond the pledge when we gave this money.
the pledge was a certain amount, we went beyond the pledge. What does that mean? Because it means that we actually overpaid what we were supposed to pay in that particular instance. If you look at in those particular instances, I'm aware that public accounts made certain recommendations or made certain views on those audited reports. But they're not only audited in this segment, but they come from the historical audit on them. And I'm aware that public accounts made particular decisions on them. I'll be interested to know to what extent have implemented those regulations by public accounts in terms of dealing with this particular process. You raise the issue of outstanding monies owed by departments. It also has a history. It's not a new phenomenon. It also has a history. And it cannot go on year after year so that you are unable to collect what the department owes. I'm aware that in some instances of what we cannot reconcile our receipts. And I find it difficult that if we pay and we are unable to reconcile the receipt, having paid, then there's a problem. I'm aware that we've done forensic auditing and we have reached a point where we say we may not be able to deal with that. I'm raising this issue so that we will be able to comment in assisting us in dealing with the annual report. Did you raise the issues of trade with a number of organizations following up on what the Prof has raised? And we raised the issues of the region. I thought that in raising those issues of the region, we probably go a little bit deeper in dealing with what the region looks like in terms of our own economic partnership agreement in the study. We get to understand that there are issues that are problematic, both in terms of the configuration, but also in terms of the content of what was agreed on by ministers and what other countries within the region are doing. We'll be interested to understand the behavior, and that links up to what Honorable Matata raised, that whilst we argue of the unity of the continent, there are these divisions within the unity of the continent. We have dealt with the issue of the FSD, and I hope that maybe you've touched it, maybe some point you may have to get into details on the foreign service dispensation. This becomes very interested in it because it has to do with the livelihood of our own diplomats. I raised in the last meeting the fact that all our diplomats who come from left-hand driving areas, they are actually disadvantaged. I would want to see a plan as to how we assist them when they come back home, because it will unfair. Effectively, it means that they get less than what other diplomats who are in a right-hand driving area get in effect. And you need to find a way to cushion them and deal with their situation. I've raised in that in the same breath, and Mam Nompozo said to me that in answering that question, that the department is looking at creating a position for someone to deal with the family support structure, particularly for the spouses. We will want to understand the development in that particular aspect. Related to that, we relate to the issue that we have raised consistently of Africa Institute, that we still believe that we are putting money into an institute that we are not keeping an eye on its function and its whereabouts. I'm aware that you said to us that we are working on it, and there are discussions. The minister said to us in the budget vote that there are discussions, but we want to know where are these discussions? When will those discussions be concluded? I think it's 2 years that we've been raising this issue. This will be probably the third year, if I'm not mistaken, that we've been raising this issue. We want to know exactly where are we in this particular discussion. The issue related to these economic entities, Doha, the EU, what's of interest to us is the coordination between DTI and foreign affairs in this particular issue. to understand. I'm raising this because Parliament has a bilateral relationship with the EU that emanates from the TDCA, the signing of the TDCA. To what extent do we find ourselves as the department feeding into assisting Parliament to understand what are the issues that emanate from this review of the TDCA and its impact on the IPA processes and the federal IPA processes, and what does that mean on the regional integration? We touch the issue of the regional integration. I'm not sure when we negotiate an economic agreement as two entities that advance our regional integration. I want to understand from the department, how do you, when you assess the configuration of SADC in this current IPA negotiations as two entities, how does that advance the unity of the region, and how does that advance the integration of the region? Are we getting ourselves into a difficulty? That is linked with the fact that there are member states that start to raise issues that they might be difficult for us.
Last CG, I'm just raising these issues so that we can deal with them and comment with them in general terms.
When I read this magazine, every time they drop it there, I read it, and I pick up issues. In fact, I left the other thing, because there are a number of issues that I wanted to raise there. I went through this program as put in this magazine. As put in this magazine of what you say is a foundation course. And you drew a contrast between the previous orientation program and this foundation course. And you deal with the fact that somebody deals with the rules, systems, and processes within the public sector and legislation such as the PFMA. You deal with the foundation management development, and you deal with the question of management development of civil servants within the public sector. And then you say that various tutors have dealt with project management, writing skill, management of development program. And you said the other presenters dealt with public diplomacy, corporate services, and protocols. What I've not seen here is the relationship of that orientation with the accounting of the department to Parliament. What's the relationship? Because when I read it, I to me, gave me the impression that it's by accident that you have Parliament, and how our government and how our state functions in terms of its relationship to that. I don't see it in as part of that orientation. And I'm saying that in terms of the magazine that we've published, it doesn't tell me that in fact those cadets and those Pula orientated, they understand that relationship. What is it? Why is it important for them to understand that relationship? It doesn't seem to be coming up in all that has been said in that particular magazine. You raise the fact that sometimes we make savings on terms of memberships because we may not know what are we paying in a particular year. Do we review the membership that we have in this organization? And do we sometimes make a political case to say that it's critical for us to belong to organization A, and maybe we should not spend resources in organization B? I raise this because I have this And I'll say this to you, DG, that I raise this because I've got an interest to see how we analyze our participation in Choga, Commonwealth Heads of State. We, as Parliament, we participate in the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. The configuration of that organization is former colonies. The head of the organization is the Queen. What does that mean politically, DG? Does it mean that we are continuously resisting to be liberated and free, and therefore we continue to subject ourselves to the head of the Queen, the leadership of the Queen? What does it really mean, politically speaking? So that keeps on worrying me all the time when we go back to this organization, say their configurations are problematic. And therefore, in the department, we do evaluations of this organization. What changes are we proposing to our principals to say, let's relook into this organization. These are the changes that we want to suggest that they must be considered. And we should be able then to say that we have not succeeded in bringing up those issues. I just want to link that with what Honorable Ted has raised. Honorable Sibanda has raised. My daughter come out clearly on the Palestinian issue. I've been finding myself in a difficult to explain why are we not going to Palestine, TG. I've discussed that with yourself, I've discussed that with Machila, I've discussed that with the Jeff. I was told at some point that I must discuss that with the deputy minister. I did all those things. And I've been finding myself difficult to explain to members why that trip is not taking place. And probably could comment on it. Maybe at some point we'll get a proper explanation, because to date, there's never been a proper explanation as to what are the real problems. Why is it that people are finding it difficult to take us into their confidence if they are difficult? Why they're not telling us? Why keep us suspended continuously if nothing comes out of it? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. I've deliberately not pointed to you, deliberately stuff, because I'm told that the house is not sitting at 3 today, it's sitting at 2. So I'm worried about time. So it was not a mistake, it was deliberate. I know the whip wants to raise the same thing. And because she's the whip, I decided that we'll deal with that in another meeting.
Chairperson, thank you, members of the committee. We won't be able to do justice to all these questions. But I'll ask my colleagues just to reflect before you can think about this. Stand by for that white paper on 6:15. Maybe we talk to the East of Western Sahara and try to make. But I'll say a few words on that. And maybe the issue about this division, Francophone, Lusophone, you will take any other issue that is accepted. If Master, you could look about this family support and the question that was raised about the human resource, the comment of the auditor general, and probably the type of cases that seem to be coming through our labor relationship. I thought they would pick up the same things, but let me just say, maybe let me start with two things that I would like us to, so that just to concede that we will follow that up. Let me start with the issue of the Pan-African Parliament. The Pan-African Parliament, the comment is that you need probably to have a deeper reflection on that, and probably you should have a separate discussion on that. That would affect. I just want to make one comment, which is the dilemma that would constitute the backdrop that would enter this discussion on from our position. The issue is that the Pan-African Parliament, we've signed an agreement with the AU. There are certain agreements that we are not party to that are between the Parliament and the AU Commission. And it is our view that as a member state that contributes to the budget of the AU, there are certain things that we expect the Pan-African Parliament and the AU to be able to resolve. It cannot be correct that because of the failure of the Pan-African Parliament and the AU to resolve issues that they are required to resolve, that there is an expectation that because the Parliament is in South Africa, South Africa must keep on putting resources, because then we will be encouraging a bad practice. The second issue that is a bit sensitive to us, we made certain concessions to the Pan-African Parliament that are captured in the agreement that we signed. We are under attack from other African countries, precisely because they are saying we're setting a bad precedent, which therefore then gets used as a basis by other institutions of the AU when they have to locate in those countries. And then they say, because South Africa is providing this, you also we expect you to provide that. So that is the problem. There was a related issue maybe I should just refer to, which is around the allowances that were paid, and this debate that is there. And our approach has been very clear on this issue. We don't know. There are rules of the AU that bind all people that also apply to the Pan-African Panel. If as a consequence of the audit, there is a determination that there are certain allowances that have been given to people that in terms of the existing rules between the AU and the Pan-African Parliament should not have been given,
then South Africa is going to sit and support the results of that audit. And that is the issue there. We tried twice to defend the parliament in Addis Ababa in a meeting of the Executive Council. We got ourselves in a situation where we were now expected to defend things that even in the way we run our own government would have been indefensible. And so I think that is the issue now. We don't want to make judgment of who is right or wrong, but we say we are a subsidiary party to the agreement. The primary agreement is between the AU and the Pan-African Parliament, and we are just a hosting country. So that is the first issue. And this issue relates also to the issue, the question that was raised, Honorable Member Perry. It's correct, the issue, there is no debate about Nepal and this being the socio-economic program of the EU, AU. The problem is far much more about the location of the Secretariat and the relationship between the infrastructure that supports the execution of NEPAD and the AU. And again, we're running into exactly the same type of issue. For example, if you look at the Secretariat, the South African government contributes about 30 million rand on an annual basis. We are the only country that contributes that level of support to the NEPAD Secretariat. As we sit now, for the second year in succession, we are expected to bail out the NEPAD Secretariat. Now, member states that are members who are supposed to be making contributions have not made them. Some of them you may understand the risk. But the fact of the matter is that some of them are pointing out that there are certain things administratively that need to be sorted out before they can contribute. Now, South Africa can't, in the light of some of those administrative problems, some of which we can see, then be expected all the time to step in, to back in, because again, we'll be acting in a manner inconsistent with the manner that would run our own institution. So I think the issue there is really about these issues about location. But I agree, Chairperson, that there are other more fundamental things about the Pan-African Parliament that probably at some point we just need to discuss. And maybe if I can just immediately relate it to the question, we think we're probably 3 or 4 years before we can actually have the building, purely from the point of view of how long it's going to take to go through the procurement processes and the structure similar to the AU. We've got a sense from our own building, of our own building in the department. The actual construction is not going to be less than 24 to 30 months. So we actually really are still about four years at the minimum in mind away from actually having the structure, even if we're to say now, after the architects have been decided, that everything is approved, let them move on step by step, the completion of the design, going out to tender for the construction, adjudication of those tenders, and then the actual commencement of the construction. With respect to our own building, in terms of the agreement we signed with the consortium, we need to be in that building by the middle of March 2009. So it's 2008 that will be out by March 2009. So that is the first set of things. Can I just say that the issues around that the general has raised around the UN and probably interrogating the benefits to the South African public on some of those areas that we transfer funds to, let me accept that as an issue that we need to investigate. Because as he correctly pointed out, in the UN-related structure, we are the conduit of the transfer of the funds. So the people would be better placed to tell us about the design, the impact of those programs, as well as the wisdom of the continued membership in those organizations, not the specialized agencies, which is the line department. So we would have to get that information, and indeed we will work on that. Let me also say to Honorable Ben, I think, because I think it's a profound question that we cannot again do justice to. Just to say the issue around the NEPAD strategy, as you point out, you summoned me to your office, and as I was discussing with Jesse, I picked up that he had raised a similar issue. In a sense, I mean, the truth of it is that we ourselves probably began to attach a lot of urgency after those interventions, because I think it was quite clear to us that there's a major gap here that we have not been following. And I think the issue about the document on South Africa's international economic relations, indeed, I think we should work on that. I must say, just as a general statement, our coordination with the DTI, nowhere close to where it should be, but significantly improved. I really think there's far much more better coordination. There's also a project that we are running in the context of the IFPS cluster, and we've decided, all of us in the IFPS cluster, to use China as a case study. What we have done in the case of China, we are trying to make sure that no government department, no sphere of government, interacts with concrete programs in the bilateral relation with China outside the commonly agreed framework, so that actually we maximize the impact of what we are trying to do. And this was a strategy accepted by our cabinet in the Lesotho in July. We are implementing when we were reporting in January. What we thought we should do is to use that as a case study, because every time we met to deal with the issues of coordination, we all ended up fighting because we're talking in the abstract. And we thought that if we can have maybe a great case study, we should provide us with learning as to how we can better coordinate it and what the impact is going to be. It's a clear strategy for China. So that's what we'll do. But the paper, I really think, is something that we'll need to follow, because as you correctly observe, there's greater linkage between really the work that we're doing in the department and the economic work. And one of the challenges that we are having in the department is really how do we, in a very concrete way, improve our overall levels of comfort with them operating in that sort of thing, given the sort of background of some of the people that we have might have come into the department, account far much of their strength on the political side, how to link that with an ability then to operate in this sort of environment. Now, Honorable Sibanda, we are silent on the issue of the plane for one simple reason, that last year, after we had made it an issue in our business plan, there was a letter that we formally got from the Treasury. And that letter said, in principle, the Treasury agreed, but this money will begin to be released in April 2009. In fact, all that we are doing now is a discussion between us and the South African National Defense Force, represented by the Air Force, on basically advice that they should give us on the type and whatever of the strategy that seems to have been developed by government is that in any event, there needs to be an increase in the pool of planes that are available under the control of the Air Force to support the executive farmers more broadly, especially with respect to the work in the country. The AFRICOM, just to say that there's a very clear decision of the SADC August, and there's a very clear decision of the AU in July, which obviously expressed themselves against the notion of AFRICOM. The dilemma, and that is the approach that South Africa is following, the dilemma that all of us are facing is that, like in so many other things, sometimes there is, at an institutional, multilateral institution basis, there's an agreement that individual countries sometimes feel the heat differently. And so we've had all sorts of rumors about two or three other countries in the continent, but I think let's leave it at the level of rumors for now, who might be engaged in discussion about the actual position of Africa. But the standing decision of both the AU and the SADC policy is exact. In fact, the SADC one is no longer an organ decision. I think it was confirmed by the summit in August. So that is the route that South Africa is following. Around the opening of the mission in Tilmaman, there's a discussion that we are having, for example, now about the invitation of the leadership of Timor-Leste to South Africa. We are trying to find out what is the best way to support, but it may not be. I know that they would like us to establish a presence, but we are, not that it's not important, we really are struggling a bit. On two angles. First of all, the resources in financial, but there's also the resources in human beings. For example, we have taken a decision that indeed in the Pacific we should be represented and be targeted through that. In this committee, I can say that probably is part of the reason that we thought politically it was important for us to have a mission there. before we can actually go on from Australia to New Zealand and other countries. Now, in Timor-Leste, as you know, we're servicing Timor-Leste from Indonesia. I don't think in the immediate, I would be lying if I said it was in the immediate plan. But what indeed we are applying our minds, and that is the context in which we are thinking of inviting the leadership of Timor-Leste. It's far much more what is the package of support, what is the nature of active engagement that South Africa should put in place in order to assist with the development of Timor-Leste. It's a pity the honorable member has left, but just to give the assurance for the other members, even though I won't get into the details, and I'll come back to the other settings. The issue of troop deployment, the route is very simple. The AU writes a letter to South Africa saying we want troops into a peacekeeping mission. That letter comes into Foreign Affairs into a unit that is called the NOCTN. From Foreign Affairs, I write a letter to my counterpart in Defense, and we ask Defense to then give us guidance. We will put the political issues and the political considerations, but the decision around and even a cabinet memo at the end of the day that authorizes troop deployment is a cabinet memo that's not piloted by all Foreign Affairs. It's piloted by the department. So that is the route that we follow with that. And just to say that in Pretoria we've got only one hotel that has got a presidential suite and the Sheraton. If we've got two delegations, for example, the reason the Prime Minister of India and the President of Brazil had to stay in Johannesburg simply that we could not accommodate both of them in Pretoria. Mm-hmm. It then becomes very difficult to manage. And that's part of the reason that Foreign Affairs have then decided that it is important for us to have two guest houses that at the minimum can handle presidential delegations. I was answering there was a question of whether this renovation of one guest house does it mean it's one or two, but essentially we're going for two guest houses. We will provide the figures. I don't think we have them about the claim from Department of Defense, except that to reassure and say defense is probably not one of our worst countries. Maybe what we should do is probably to send to the chair of the committee just the outline of the in terms of the debt, government by government and province by province, so that you just have the picture of what it is going to be, especially for the before you talk about Shuma, the issue of the land. The question related to the right of, certainly a right to observation. It's a right of, but in essence, you have to find it. All that treasury gives, it gives you an authority that says we have looked at what steps you've taken and we are satisfied that you've taken all practical steps. And if you spend money to close this account, we will regard it as wisdom. I mean, that's essentially what the other one is remains opening. So we have been discussing now that we have to look at what exactly happened towards the end of course, the decision that you can only take at the end of the year. One of the things that, of course, we might approach treasury on is to look at some of the currency savings, which we cannot spend during the year because it's not our money. But treasury can authorize that we use the currency savings to actually offset that. But we're not there yet. I think we're somewhere around the end of the financial year, we'll have to look at how we can try to, even if we cannot do it on it at one go, but at least to begin the process. Because otherwise it will remain as something that is there when we know there's no chance of us collecting the money. And with regard to the 29 million of money, I really find I would comment even because the duty of now you said it's diminished to say that they do not owe the money. The fact of the matter is that Foreign Affairs was the conduit of releasing money from the African Relations Fund into a program designed by the Department of Sport. The Department of Sport modified its business plan after a certain amount and they are correcting your observation and then the money significantly increased. But the fact of the matter is that when the money was released from the African Relations Fund, it was because it was motivated by the Department of Sport. The dilemma that the Department of Sport had was that the money, they were satisfied in their own view, that the money has been legitimately spent. But The Auditor General wanted clear evidence that the money has been sent for the purpose, which is why we ended up with the Auditor General and us working on putting an audit. The result of that audit came out. The audit showed some lapses. On our side, we then communicated with the Minister of Finance and said, now the auditors haven't done everything, we think we should bring this issue to closure. Because the audit is not pointing out to that money was misappropriated. It simply says that some of the documentation that we need to come to a conclusive evidence that actually we don't have the documentation. So and that documentation is not going to come from Foreign Affairs, it comes from the Department of Sport. And they are the ones who are running the program because this was African Cup of Nations. So that is where the problem is. And that is why the Auditor General has been trying to be very sensitive in how this is reflected in the report of the Africa Renaissance Fund administered by us, because they've looked at the steps that we have taken on our side, but then they need to bring closure to this. And as far as we know, there should be a discussion between now the Minister of Finance and the Department of Sport to bring closure to this. So that is one of the things, just to deal with the issues that but can we talk a bit to the questions around the heads of missions and corporate services? That adds to the list that we come to. Some of the difficulties and how we're dealing with them. The strategic integration chair and the relationship with Angola, we cannot raise the issues before. I think Angola's relationship are very important to us. We are concerned about the level at which they are. That's why I led the senior officials to go to Angola. That's why the minister is going there on the council of the state. So there's a real attempt. And I think you are correct, the implication that the relations have a bearing also on the unity within the context of regional integration in Southern. They also have a bearing on the fact that we act with Angola in so many other strategic areas, for example, like the DRC, and it's important for us to open the lines of communication. So that is something that I think on the South African side we're trying our best to work on. There were recommendations from General Olomis about labor relations and also maybe think about between somebody from the president to that we will try to do. Can I just give one assurance, although the Honorable Member Pepper is not here? Every time Foreign Affairs acquires a piece of land, whether it's in Bamako or wherever, we identify a piece of land that will be suitable for the building of our chancery or residence or whatever. And then there is a process that involves the people from Public Works and the people from the land board who go to the specific country and assess whether the value attached to that land is market related. And only with their approval and their concurrence we then proceed on to purchase any land. We don't make actual decisions about the issues there. Let me see some of the comments that you made, Chair, around this was following on Honorable Member Peck's question about the issue of, and I'm happy that you're meeting the U.S. Ambassador to explain some of the issues, because the issues have not become lighter. As you would know, that 4 months ago they introduced an additional element, which is no longer now whether you are a history of being arrested. But basically, if you are a man, there is a question that you have to answer. And that question is, can you use a firearm? If you say yes, they say automatically they are system is triggered also. And so it's a very complicated process. But as I say, I don't think we can answer it. We can best answer what the requirements of the U.S. government. On our side, there's a discussion, and I think that as far as we can say now, that we are having with Home Affairs about our system of visa waivers is not really aligned to our foreign policy. There are many countries, and this always puts us into major discussions, and I think because the process driven by Home Affairs sometimes has not benefited from a lot of input from Home Affairs. And this is a historical thing from the date of 1994 in the way probably the approach of the Department of Home Affairs that it took on some of the issues. So it's very difficult, but we are trying to work with Home Affairs to better align this so that we can stress issues of reciprocity. We, for example, sent a formal communication to Home Affairs, and we've spoken about countries where we think that we should be far much more aggressive on insisting on reciprocity. But of course, we also have identified countries that we think we can't try to impose something when we know that the downside on our side is far much bigger. And countries that we've actually said to Home Affairs, look, we can live with this for a certain period of time, but this is the intermediate step that we should try to. The issue of coordination of international work in South Africa is a very difficult issue and is a subject that Cabinet has asked the IFPS cluster to work on. And I'm raising it in the context of the question that has been raised about access of some of our diplomats here to our political principles without the guests knowing. We always in foreign affairs constantly face the embarrassment that sometimes there are things that are discussed with blind departments that we have no clue about. And we sometimes get into the loop on those issues when there's suddenly a major unhappiness that the embassy has. For example, embassy would come to us and say, but we've been trying to have meetings with Minister so and so for the past 18 months, and we say we know nothing about that. But we know that we should have actually tried to interact with foreign affairs identification. But it's a major issue, and the balance that Cabinet, the broad mandate that Cabinet gave us that we should work on, is how to facilitate a system of engagement in terms of the execution of our international relations that facilitates work, that makes sure that we stop this thing of people running circles around us. They have three different meetings, and basically they are comparing notes on what different people are saying. We've not had any chance to communicate because we don't know where else they are meeting. That is the one side. The second side is at the same time, how do we design a system that is not too bureaucratic and therefore stifles interaction. So that's the challenge that we have. The peace conference, the Middle East peace conference, the information that we had, Honorable Member Kosano, was that we were going to be, South Africa was going to be invited if it's not already invited. That is what we got. I think the Palestinians had put the name of South Africa as one of the candidates that got informed from us. But we'll see in terms of whether actually that materializes. I'm unaware that it has materialized yet. And the issue of Sudan, all I can say is that we are okay with the report of the committee. As honorable members know, there was no meeting at official level this time around in the engagement. But as you would understand that as part of the preparation for the president with the meeting with President Al-Bashir, the Department of Foreign Affairs is expected to put together some sort of reflection on where the state is and what are the areas of concern are. And I know that for a matter of fact that Ambassador Makubela and the Ngozi's unit, the African Press, reflected in those decisions and some of the issues that were raised by the Honorable Member. So I think they probably would have come out with not yet a feedback from the Minister and the Deputy Minister who participated in that meeting. The deadlines that departments should have to pay our debt, truly at the end of each financial year we should be at work. We should not be having how the system is supposed to function. The big problem that we have is that we've improved our own system to try and show people on time, on a monthly basis, what they are debting. We don't have a system to actually compel them. We went to the Treasury and I said to the Treasury, there's no way we can continue like this. Now we're going to stop paying people outside mission. Treasury must design a different system. Treasury then undertook that, no, let's not do that because it will force them to open to us to give better authorizations, and they thought that the risk for that was high. So we are back to square one on that. But really on our side, we're trying our level best to put pressure for this thing to be done. I'll ask Nkosi to talk about Western Sahara. Just to tell the issue of IPSA, you are correct, there are some negative features. In fact, just this morning, there is an interdepartmental meeting that has been taking place, coordinated by Home Affairs, and to follow on the issues, both with India and Brazil, on some of these issues, because We are planning that in the next ICSA summit, one of the major areas of research will be around what we call the transnational crime system, which would include the issues that we are serving. So it has been a gap in terms of our financial cooperation. And as you correctly pointed out, all of us are vulnerable to this. And that this is something that should be doing. Maybe maybe the last point, and then I'll just look at the other issues. Let me say, Ms. Honorable Sibanda, I'll talk to you after this about the issue on consumers. I could not get the very first question that you raised, the very first comment that you made. The issue about the trip to Palestine, I don't know how to deal with this issue. Because I don't think I'm comfortable dealing with this issue now here. But let me take the blame if there has not been a formal response. I have seen the response that we discussed with the Deputy Minister of Defense, which was supposed to have sent to me. If you say you have not received it, then it's something I have to deal with. About the views of the department, which were far much more, and I think the letter was going to conclude, of course, and I can say that, by saying that would have been the view of the department on the issue. But of course, the department is not the one that can stand, and the committee itself is wanted to proceed with the meeting that the department will facilitate the necessary arrangement in Palestine. We ourselves have been wrestling with a very difficult issue with respect to our Gaza office currently in our engagement with Palestine, and which I'm not sure we have resolved. And it has to do with the fact, what is the status that we give to our Gaza office? Does our ambassador go to Gaza? Does that therefore by default give legitimacy to the authority? How do we characterize the authority of Hamas within Gaza as opposed to what is happening in the West Bank? So there are some of those difficult issues that we ourselves have been trying. Deputy Minister Bahad has proposed issues to the Middle East about twice, and it's partly related to some of the issues that we're trying to do. But as I say, I think the more detail on the issue perhaps would be there for him to try to deal with. I must apologize that has not formally come to the committee. I think the issue around the point that we're making about the airport, of course I think we would completely agree with. I think for us we take as given that the fact that we're negotiating that the countries are fragmented on the IFA negotiation is a problem. We've raised that formally in the context of our engagement with the EU. The big issue for us is that, and also not only fragmented with respect to the airport, but also was fragmented because members of FADAC belong also to commerce, or some of them, as you know. And that is why there is such contestation about the routes that we should follow for regional integration. And that is why, that's what I was alluding to, because all that is leads to what is therefore the modality that South Africa is putting on the table as a proposal that we should follow for regional integration. That helps to force countries quite early on to make the choices that they need to make. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be around that, because we know that in terms of the WTO, no country can belong to two different customs unions at the same time. But how do we manage the process of going to that, such that you open up the options? But also, if, for example, SADC is perceived by some countries not to be giving the same benefits as commerce, and we want those countries to come into SADC, how do we make the process of regional integration in SADC to be attractive for the countries that we want to get into SADC? And I think that's basically the debate around this model. As I say, there's a document I know that Cabinet is discussing today, which is supposed to help inform us, and probably this entire area would also be an area that requires a separate far much more focused discussion. As I say, I know that some of the issues we can get into deeper on, but I'll pass over to Solisi and Mark to comment on this.
Can I?
Yes.
Chairperson, just before this, I understand DG is wanted out next door. We are waiting on him next door.
The DG is wanted outside.
That's the message it was given to me, Chair.
I asked not for a minute.
Okay.
That's why.
Okay. No, thanks very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
On the question of Western Sahara, I'm sure that the honorable members are aware that there's currently ongoing negotiations, dialogue and discussions between the representatives of the SADR, Polisario, and those of the Royal Kingdom of Morocco, aimed at trying to resolve this long-standing impasse between the Polisario and Morocco. You can't hear. Too far. Is it okay now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so sorry about that. No, I was just saying that members of the committee are no doubt aware that there's ongoing dialogue. Discussions and indeed negotiations between the SADR and the Royal Kingdom of Morocco. These negotiations, in our view, represent a positive development in this whole debacle, which, as you know, was gradually becoming the forgotten issue of decolonization on the African continent. There has been a very lengthy period of impasse of standoff between the SADR and Morocco until such time that the UN initiated the process of dialogue between the two. The major issue on the table revolves around the future of the Western Sahara with the Polisario pressing for independence, for the recognition of the territory, pressing for statehood on the one hand, and with the Moroccan government on the other, talking the language of autonomy within the kingdom of Morocco. Obviously, autonomy with a very limited status of self-government and self-rule. So this is the issue, there will be talks later this month in Geneva, and these will be followed up by talks in February next year. We cannot prejudge the outcome of these deliberations, but at least I think what we draw satisfaction from in South Africa is the fact that for the first time in years since the collapse of the Houston talks, the two parties are once more in dialogue. And I think this is something that should be welcomed. So that's where we are with regard to the issue of Western Sahara. On the question of
of Swaziland, we will be engaging with the Kingdom of Swaziland at a high level. As part of our diplomatic foreign policy program on the African continent, and indeed within the Southern African region, we'll be engaging with the Kingdom of Swaziland to discuss a wide range of questions relating to the cooperation between our two countries and also some other questions that concern the two countries, as well as broadly our respective roles within the framework of SADC and the AU. So there will be there are plans afoot to engage the Kingdom of Swaziland within the broad rubric of the consolidation of the African agenda, building relations with African countries, consolidating and expanding this for the mutual benefit of both countries. With regard to Juba, indeed there are challenges, as you are well aware. The government of South Sudan came about as a result of the signing of the CPA between Khartoum and the SPLM. And since it's a new government, a nascent government, is grappling with the challenges of government, included amongst those is the challenge of putting regulatory framework and the necessary laws that govern the use, the management of state resources, of which land is a major resource. And indeed, part of the challenge that we've been having with regards to the establishment of our diplomatic mission in Juba relates to the fact that there is no regulatory framework that is in place for the reasons that I've mentioned. So we're working with the authorities in Juba to try and deal with the situation. And we were hopeful that before the end of our financial year, which is March next year, we should be in a position to have a presence in Juba. And such presence would be within the framework of normally acceptable frameworks that are required in terms of our own laws. The strategy to deal with the challenges of unity on the continent. Indeed, this is a big challenge. It's something that I think we will have to deal with on an ongoing basis. But I'm sure members will be aware that the various regional economic communities, regional blocs that you have within the continent, they straddle those colonial divides and the legacy of colonialism. If you look at SADC is not just your English-speaking countries, but you also have former Portuguese-speaking countries, as well as the French-speaking DRC. You look at ECOWAS, it cuts across all those, and to some extent, the East African community also cuts across those. So I think there is an effort on the part of the continent to shake, as it were, the legacy of colonialism and to begin to assert an independent African identity. But we need to be alive to the fact that the assertion of that independent African identity is contingent upon a number of factors. Part of the reality that we cannot
be blind to is the fact that most of these countries' economies are still linked to the former colonial countries. The administration, the legal system, education system, health system, all these things in most of these countries are still linked to the former colonial power. So it's a reality that we confront. It's a reality that we need to deal with. And I think it's going to be a process. The eventual cutting off of the umbilical cord between the African countries and the former colonial powers is not going to be an event. It's a process. And I think that process started in earnest when these countries became independent. It continued when the OAU was launched. And it continues in the current environment where we have the African Union as the custodian and the champion of the unity, the integration, development of an African identity for African countries. So I think it's going to be a process, this whole question. I think those are the questions that you wanted to take.
Thank you, honorable members. Starting with the question of Swahili, yes, we are offering Swahili, training in Swahili. We just highlighted French for senior managers in this presentation. But it doesn't mean we don't offer other foreign languages, see Portuguese, Spanish, Swahili. So we do offer that. Labor relations cases, just to say, we are reporting on last year where it used to be an issue, it used to be a difficulty indeed. But we have made so much progress that at this point in time, we're sitting with 12 cases that we are currently dealing with. And we believe that with the appointment of this presiding officer, we should be able to deal with the 12 cases for the year. So, it was a difficulty, but we have really focused on clearing the backlog. We focused on dealing with the cases as soon as they arrive. In terms of the nature of cases that we're dealing with, the bulk of those cases have to do with negligence and failure to follow procedures, be it at head office or in our missions abroad. And we take that quite seriously. And some of them are when you do audits in terms of how missions are functioning, and we pick up a lot of those discrepancies and we bring the culprits to book. So in about 22 or so cases that we dealt with last year had to do with failure to follow procedures, and the rest, it's theft, which is about 6 cases or so, but the bulk is around failure to follow procedures. With regard to, there were 2 issues around wellness. One had to do with the HIV program, HIV AIDS program. To elaborate on that, on the one hand, we do the normal, the usual things that we do around mentioning HIV and AIDS, which is education and training. The World AIDS Day, we have activities around that. But more specifically, we continue to focus on the Know Your Status campaign that we have started for a while now. So every year, we just intensify the Know Your Status campaign. And I think, when we looked at the numbers for this year, a lot of people are becoming interested in knowing their status, in knowing their status, particularly the young people that we have brought into the department. And that includes the voluntary counseling and testing program. What we have recently done now is the knowledge, attitude, behaviors, and perception study, so that can inform the specific interventions that we are now going to do around HIV and AIDS. that is in addition to what we've been normally doing. And we just want to intensify some of the specific or targeted interventions, and they will be informed by the outcomes of that CAP survey that we just completed. But bottom line is that we look at HIV and AIDS as part of the overall wellness of employees in the department. The other issue on wellness was that the chairperson raised around focus on spouses, focus on family members, progress on that. We have intensified that. Specifically, before people get posted, we insist that they have sessions within our wellness center, preparing for them for cultural shock, for how to cope with stresses of moving, the trauma of being posted. What we need to intensify on, which is for the last remaining part of the year, is to then say the kind of support that they require while they are there. So what we started is looking at before they go, making sure that we sensitize and support as much as we can before they go. And when they come back, we're focusing on how to reintegrate them. The gap that we now need to focus on is while they are there during those 4 years, what more can we do? And obviously that will be informed a lot by what we've put together, what we call a wellness committee, that will advise us on what are the kind of things that we can begin to introduce. So there is a lot of work that has been done in that area. We will definitely look into the some kind of MOU with the Department of Justice around interpreters and translators. Just to say, that's a very rare skill that we discovered when we were looking for interpreters and translators within foreign affairs for our own utilization. It's a very rare skill, and we really explored with universities and so forth. But it's something that we definitely will look into and see what's possible. The comments by the Auditor General say that to comply, it really has to do with the vacancy rate that the BG has highlighted, that I've come to the committee to talk about. It's also discussed at length, as the DG was saying, in our midterm review last week. We had a meeting yesterday afternoon to say how do we really deal with these vacancies to make sure that we close them and reduce, because the compliance has to do with the vacancy rate. Public service does stipulate that this is more or less what the vacancy rate should be across government, and most of the departments are really fixing to get to that level. So that's just the fee that's compliant. So we are putting together a master plan, really doing everything that we can to try and reduce the vacancies that we have. And not that we are not doing a lot as it is, but we're just trying to go do more and see how far we can go. The foundation costs, Chairperson, the issue that you are raising, yes, indeed, it covers, and we feel very strongly about how we integrate new people into the department. So hence, we have the portion by family, the portion by the department. Then there's a portion where the DDG, including the BG, spend a week with the new people. Now, one of the DDG who spends a considerable amount of time with the new people is the DDG for Corporate Services, the CFO. And one of the presentations that the DDG Corporate Services does is around how government functions. And then it looks at the entire system of government, Parliament, the oversight role of Parliament, and so forth. So we do focus on that, and that part is done by the DDG Corporate Services. But Sandy also, in the orientation program, one of the things why Sandy is insisting that all new people must go through the Sandy orientation is precisely to do that. There's one employer, which is government, even though you're going to a department. So the Sandy orientation also focuses on the entire government and the various tiers of government. The relationship between head of mission ambassadors and the managers is mostly what we call corporate services managers. And it's something that we've been dealing with now. In fact, every year when we have our regional discussions with heads of mission, also with corporate business managers, it's an issue that we raise. To a large extent, it has to do with how we carry out the work. Missions, we have business plans that are led by the head of mission. But obviously, you require resources to carry out that business plan. So a large part of it has to do with the ambition around implementing the business plan and requiring the resources. And how you, if the head of mission, for instance, says we need to do this thing and implement this particular program, and the corporate business manager says, but we don't have the resources for that. And I think what we advise the corporate business managers is to say, they have to, you know, you need to step back and understand, to say, what is the problem? Are there other ways of trying to deal with the issue? Yes, you may not have money on the budget, but can you explore? So I think it's a two-way thing, where also heads of missions or ambassadors have to be sensitive to say, if I have a business plan, I have a program, I need to stick to it. I can't suddenly expand it because there are other needs, because there are resources that have to make the business plan. But also involving the corporate business managers during the planning process, during the monitoring of the business plan and so forth. So a large part of it is to do with resources, where the corporate says, you know, when they will say, but you don't have the money and you can't do it. And the head of business says, but these are the priorities that I need to focus on, that I need to think about. You can't say, there's no money. So it's just how, it's more an issue of how. How does the corporate business manager understand and advise, and also how does the ambassador, the head of mission, involve and include the corporate business manager in the whole? Yeah. So, but we are highlighting it at both efforts, in the head of mission, but also with the corporate business manager. It's a challenge, but I think we're getting there. Chatterson, the issue of left-hand cars. There's nothing much really that we can do to cushion, because this is outside the department in terms of saying we cannot. Because in government, gender as a principle, it's a benefit is available, but you're not able to take on that benefit, you forfeit that benefit. So it's that principle. So there's really, because the department if it was the appropriate car, they do assist with, according to the chair parameters and power, we can assist. But if you cannot bring, the same way that if you can't take advantage of medical aid, there's no way that you can then cushion that. So that's the principle. I don't know beyond that what you can do. Yeah. Thank you. I think that's an address of the chair.
Just to say, my problem is we look the question, I don't think there are other countries in the continent that have got something similar to the African Donations Fund. But I think we can do it. So this is in Egypt and Tunisia. But we can look at that and then try to probably come there. So that one, let's investigate. Chair, just to say the issue of the ISA, 2 weeks ago we had a discussion with the new CEO of ISA, Mr. Machon. We halted that process in the middle because of a specific report on science and technology last year, which had to do with the fact that during that leadership transition, and also some things that they were also going to review before, all sorts of things that they were doing, they were uncomfortable that we could even begin to discuss the transfer of the ISA at that point in time. They felt that because they've been working with the institution, they would rather work on the institution and then when they sorted out the immediate issues that they could see, then they could have the discussion. And indeed, sometime around the middle of the year, the DG of science and technology, Joaquin, said to me they are ready now to start again with us, because the two ministers have met and delegated the DG to discuss. And it is in that context that I had the meeting with President. So we're trying to again look, and then we'll come back to the minister with the proposal. So it's not an issue that all parties, I say that Pfizer Technology was unhappy with discussing this year, they are dumping ISA because there were some problems at the time. That was in the course of that. So we are continuing with that discussion, as we've been saying with Mkhonisi and myself, and we will have to pick that up there. And just to say also that the question that was raised about the reciprocity arrangement with foreign officers and the issues of tarmac and airport, say, as you know, this is a very big issue that we continuously are fighting with. And part of the problem is that there's a structure which is the Border Control Committee that is that exists, that makes recommendations. We sit in it as foreign affairs, makes recommendations about what access a diplomat can have within our main airport. And indeed, one of the issues we've raised with some of the countries, sometimes we find that some of the more vocal countries are the countries which afford us far much less than what we're giving them here. But I think we also have to consider that there are countries that where in their countries they give us far much more access than we are giving them now because of some problems that we've been discussing with ISA, largely related around capacity and containing some of the illegal activities sometimes that go. And this is something that there's a committee that regularly interacts with the diplomatic corps. But the principle that we're working on that we do everything but safeguard the security and the integrity of our main entry point, but at the same time try to facilitate as best we can. But this is an issue I think that is working in progress. Really, as I said at the beginning, I don't think we could possibly do full justice to all the questions that given the time. But on my side, thanks very much that the nature of the question, I must say, everything taken. I really would like to thank the committee for its continuing support, and of course we take quite a lot of these comments. There's not so much, they might be phrased as questions, but I think they are pointers in certain senses about things that maybe we should be far much more alive to. We do take them in that industry.
Thank you,
Didi.
We have
Mr.
We are expected by Parliament that having listened to the annual report within a period of time, we took a view that says that there are issues that are outstanding, and some of them the ones that are raising now. As a committee, we will have to go back and look at, for instance, our budget, both the budget. And once you look at that in relation to the annual report, we may come back to you and say that there are issues that we want them flagged out in the annual report. I'm looking now, for instance, non-compliance in section 4 of the PFMA, included in the fixed asset register. 2,306 assets purchased after April 2002, there's no paperwork for that. And subsequent an adjustment of 1,120,390 was processed to revalue these assets to comply with the department's accounting policies. But basically there's no paperwork to account for these assets, and these assets were indeed taken up. I mean, these are the issues that it's difficult, having received the document yesterday, I had to sit and go through it and scan it as quickly as one can. I suspect that there will be a number of other issues that emanate that one might have skipped when going through the document. Of course, after having wine in 10 years, then you go home, you read, there are things that you read them twice. So we agree that we are going to set up a process within the committee to look at and pick up those other issues. The other issue, Chairperson, I do not at any given time willing to accept the fact that the principle of government says
non-taking of a benefit before stated. These diplomats, it's not because they are not taking it. Regulation that prohibits them. The fact that they cannot bring their cars here is not out of a choice. And therefore, they have not forfeited the benefit because they want to take it. The regulation does not allow them to do it. And DG, I want to request that you need to look at this. I'm not prepared to accept that principle. It's wrong as far as those diplomats are concerned. And it's unfair to them that they find themselves in a situation where they can't do anything. And the department says, remember the rules. The rules in this case are problematic for them, and you need to find a way to deal with them. I believe that we need to look after our diplomats better than DG. And I want to say, the explanation given, well understood, not accepted. We need to find a way to find an assistance to these diplomats. We can't just dump them with the rules. It's unfair to them, and I think that we need to do something for them. I'm raising this issue because we've just sent Honorable Gibson. So that tells me that the part of the members who are sitting here, there might be diplomats tomorrow, and they're going to say that the chairperson never said anything about our faith. It's because he was worried about Nseneke and non-recommendation of his increase. So that's the problem. But DG, with that note, there's something that I think we're not doing well, DG. You know, the EU has been accusing us of being an obstacle in this IPA negotiation. I do not believe that we've done much to deal with that particular to communicate to our people that we are not an obstacle. We have intensified the parliamentary work around the IPA issues. We were trying to get a joint meeting with trade and industry, public hearings. We've intensified that. We've got the parliamentary forum to take certain decisions on that. When we meet our counterparts end of November, we've bilateral, and I think that we should ask the department through the Office of the Speaker to brief that delegation that meets the EU. So these are part of the issues that we've been taking up. So by the time people go there, if they have some substance of the issues and difficulties that emanates from there. So I'm saying that these are the issues that I think we need to not, of course, there's sometimes a blur of a line of function as to whether we say the funding or phone as I said. But I think we just have to navigate ourselves quite carefully. The last point, DG, you know, we had a seminar on business, and we've been asked again to say that it's important for the Department of Foreign Affairs that as we do, in fact, we ask them to, business people to elaborate further on their suggestion that they made to us last year of a business, of a competitiveness of some sort. To say, how do they see that forum unfolding? And the suggestion was that it should not be a formalized thing, but it's a very important thing for the minister to talk to them, outlining the priorities of the department as far as international work is concerned. So that when they go back to their boardrooms and they take their own business decisions, they need to reflect on what has been said to them in terms of making those investment decisions. We want to ask yourself to reflect on that and look at the possibility. Because all what they are saying to us is that we need to understand what are the priorities of the country. But when we make our decisions, we know what the country, where does the country want to go, and how then do we place ourselves in that process. The topic this year was the role of business in the implementation of foreign policy. And they say that for us to participate in that role, we need to get at least from the department what is it that they will be focusing on. So when we go back to our boardrooms, we can then reflect on that. The committee took a decision that we should pursue that in our program next year. We should place that again and look at the broader participation including civil society on that. Because we believe that the implementation of foreign policy is not only the department's work, but it's all South Africans that we should take into account what we do and what we don't do, what we say and what we don't say. With those words, DG, we want to thank you and the team. And that then, as soon as we have done our own housekeeping work, we might come back to you to say that there are these other issues. But I suspect that once members are satisfied that those issues are done, we might not even come back to you. But that will be the outcome of that particular process.
Thank you.
Yeah.